It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It's been quite a while since a Republican won this state, but we're going to win the state. I think we're going to win the state easy. Natural gas production, big story today, in New Mexico has increased by 40%. That means great wages and it means jobs. Left-wing Democrats want to confiscate your guns and eliminate your God-given right to self-defense. I will never, ever allow them to take away your sacred right to keep and bear arms. We are finally putting America first. We're reversing decades of calamitous trade policies. We're building the wall, and it's going up, and it's going up for us. The left tries to threaten, bully, intimidate Americans into submission. Look at what they're doing today to Justice Kavanaugh. Look at what they're doing. The New York Times had to put out a major apology. And they had to change their story. I call for the resignation of everybody at the New York Times involved in the Kavanaugh smear story. And while you're at it, the Russian witch hunt hoax, which is just as phony a story. The Times is dead. Long live the New York Times. Long live the New York Times. And I do want it to live, but they have to change their ways.
Well, all right. That's the president last night in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, doing one of his rallies. The interesting thing is, of course, that no Republican candidate has carried New Mexico in really more than a decade, long time ago. And New Mexico is kind of one of those states that you know about it sort of, but it's kind of remote. It's kind of an island, I think. It doesn't have a lot of, because it's sparsely populated compared to other states. It doesn't have a lot of electoral votes, and it doesn't get a lot of attention, and you don't have a lot of news coming out of New Mexico. And yes, of course, there are a lot of Latinos in New Mexico, but not only. But that is primarily, I think, the reason why New Mexico has a lot of Native Indians, and the Democrats have had a real stronghold there for a long time. But last night, the rally was so well attended that thousands waited outside. I saw some of the interviews. And many, Latino, look, the thing about being an American, can I say this again? It has nothing to do with color. It has to do with ideology. It has to do with embracing the Constitution and the history of this country. And you can be any color you want to be. As long as you embrace that, we are all Americans. Now, some people are arguing that they don't have to embrace that. They can burn the flag. They can stomp on the flag. They can do whatever they want. They can ignore the Constitution, destroy the Supreme Court, break down the institutions, and still love America. I don't think so. But that's what's happening in New Mexico. And it looks like there's a lot of enthusiasm for President Trump there. Let me just say that, interestingly, this is kind of a sidebar, but Black and Latino voters are actually threatening to buck the 2020 Democratic hopefuls over the issue of, guess what, charter schools. Because the poll says that 58% of Black voters and 52% of Latino voters support charter schools. But the Democratic candidates don't want charter schools because they're tied, they're very strongly tied, shall we say, to the teachers unions. The teachers unions provide workers. It's kind of a quid pro quo. And so the Democratic candidates don't want charter schools, but minority families do want charter schools because they know the kids are getting better educations than they are in public schools. So that's going to be one of the very interesting sidebars. I also have to say that a lot of Latino and Black Americans don't want the border to be invaded. They are Americans. They understand that we have to have some kind of protection. and that jobs are sacred and they're not to be given out to people who don't legally reside here at the expense of America's citizens. So anyway, don't be too surprised if something happens in New Mexico. All right, so yesterday the president did a presser in one of the side rooms of the White House with one of the representatives from Bahrain. And after he finished, he spoke for quite a long time. And I listened to most, I think I listened to all of it. It's the first time I've had a chance to do that in the midday and really listen to the president. I have to say, he is amazing. And one of the things I notice is that since I've been through lots of presidents here, and the first time I saw the press really completely hold a president publicly, they clandestinely criticized a president and tried to undermine them, but they didn't do it publicly and so disrespectfully until Richard Nixon. And then, of course, with Reagan and these press conferences, they just had no respect. But you don't see that with the I know you think that we do. We do see it. We see it in what they write and how they speak. But when they're actually interacting with him, he really does hold the room, and he takes command of almost every issue. It is amazing. So with that in mind, I want to play just a little bit of this clip for you. Yesterday, of course, was the aftermath of those attacks in Saudi Arabia, destroying, as I understand it, half of their oil fields. And the president was asked, of course, if he thought they were thinking that Iran is responsible. I'm not sure that's been corroborated even this morning. It wasn't corroborated as of last night. So just stay tuned for the news today. But the president was saying, we think it's likely, but we don't know for sure. And then he was asked if he wants to go to war with Iran. He said, I don't want to go to war with anyone. I don't want to rush to war. But if we have to, and this is what he says.
Evidence, proof that Iran was behind the attack.
Well, it's looking that way. We'll have some pretty good, we're having some very strong studies done, but it's certainly looking that way at this moment. And we'll let you know. As soon as we find out definitively, we'll let you know. But it does look that way.
Do you want war with Iran?
Do I want war? I don't want war with anybody. I'm somebody that would like not to have war. We have the strongest military in the world. We've spent more than $1.5 trillion in the last short period of time on our military. Nobody's even come close. We have the best equipment in the world. We have the best missiles. And as you say, you just bought the Patriot system. There's nothing even close. No, I don't want war with anybody, but we're prepared more than anybody. 2.5 years ago, I will tell you, it was not the same thing. And with what we've done, we've totally rebuilt our military in so many different ways, but we've rebuilt it. And there's nobody that has the F-35. We have the best fighter jets, the best rockets, the best missiles, the best equipment. But with all of that being said, we'd certainly like to avoid it.
All right, that's just part of what the president said. Now, you can say that the president is, uses hyperbole, but I can tell you from national security meetings that I've had in Washington in the last several years, our military has been in absolutely dreadful shape. If you knew how dangerously exposed we were after the presidency of Barack Obama, you would shudder. And to make that point, the president said something yesterday that I haven't heard anyone report on, but I heard him say this. And so we pulled it. And I remember in discussions in these security briefings what a crisis this was that the American people never knew. Let's listen.
As the facility at Abqaiq continues to burn, the attack
sorry,
is threatening
Rob.
To engulf the region.
Let's do clip 8. Sorry.
3 years ago almost, General Mattis told me, sir, we're very low on ammunition. I said, that's a horrible thing to say. I'm not blaming him. I'm not blaming anybody. But that's what he told me. Because we were at a position where with a certain country, I won't say which one, we may have had conflict. And he said to me, sir, if you could delay it, because we're very low on ammunition. And I said, you know what, General, I never want to hear that again from another general. No president should ever, ever hear that statement. We're low on ammunition. And we now have more ammunition, more missiles, more rockets, more tanks. We have more of everything than we've ever had before, more jet fighters. When I came here, 50% of our jet fighters didn't fly. You know that. And they were in bad shape. And now we have the best fighters in the world. Everybody wants to buy them. Are you buying our jet fighters?
We are, sir.
Which one?
We have 16.
That's great.
Signed it here.
You have good taste.
Thank you.
That's a great one. So we are very high on ammunition now. That's a story I've never told before. Breaking news. But we were very low. I could even say it stronger. I don't want to say no ammunition, but that gets a lot closer. I said, I never want to hear that again, and I never want another president of the United States to hear that again. Could you imagine, as president, when they say we're very low on ammunition? By the way, stronger than that, but I'm not going to go there. That was what I was told. And I said, I never want to be in a position like that again. And he said, could you delay if we do something, sir? Could you delay it as we fill up? And that is what I inherited from the past administration, and in all fairness to President Obama, to administrations before President Obama. That's what I got stuck with. And we fixed it, and we fixed it good.
All right. So I just want to emphasize to you, see, these are things that you wouldn't know and you couldn't know. If you had known it, you might have really worried yourself sick. But that did happen under the Obama administration. In spite of what he said just then, I remember distinctly how bullets, they stopped making bullets, and our troops didn't have bullets. It's just shocking, but it's true. And so with that, you think about the danger in the world. Benjamin Hall did a report yesterday about the importance of what happened in Saudi Arabia to the world's economy. Let's listen.
As the facility at Abqaiq continues to burn, the attack is threatening to engulf the region. Saudi Arabia has not yet commented on the extent of the damage, but 5% of the world's oil supply has been cut, leading to the biggest one-day rise in oil price since the first Gulf War. Despite numerous denials from Iran, the evidence is mounting against them.
Evidence shows that the weapons used in the terror attacks, whether it be in Bukhaik or Khores, are Iranian weapons. And initial findings show that the attack did not originate from Yemen as claimed.
The U.S. has reached the same conclusion, releasing satellite images of the damage, alleging that the pattern of destruction suggested the attack came from either Iraq or Iran. U.S. officials now say they have further evidence the oil facilities were attacked by multiple cruise missiles and drones from across the Persian Gulf in the Islamic Republic. Iran has called the U.S. claims maximum lies.
To accuse the Islamic Republic of Iran with these attacks and defensive measures is in line with their maximum falsehood policy.
Tehran said that it is now ready to fight a fully fledged war with the U.S. and warned that it is armed with advanced missile technology capable of reaching U.S. facilities in the region. It is
all right,
also
I'm going to interrupt
in
this report because I want to tell you something else. Thank you, Benjamin Hall from Fox News. This is by Daniel Horowitz. We're going to put this on our Facebook page because I may not get through all of this. America's oil miracle. And Daniel makes this point. In any other era, Iran's suspected attack on Saudi Arabia's largest oil processing plant would have inflicted unprecedented economic pain on America and the rest of the world. But instead, American crude oil production hit an all-time record of 12.5 million barrels per day in August. That's a 40% increase in production since President Trump took office in January 2017. And it's not just our oil-producing capacity. It's our oil refineries are processing record amounts of oil. Earlier this year, we hit 18.8 million barrels per day through our refineries. The U.S. is now dominating the global market and helping relieve the pressure of Iran and Russia's petro-tyranny on other countries. When Trump took office, there was essentially no concept of us exporting crude oil to the world. Our exporting capacity has now increased threefold. Then there's the natural gas revolution. Natural gas production has increased 24% since Trump took office and is hovering near record highs at 2.74 trillion cubic feet per month. There's a whole lot of other stats I could give you, but it's an amazing thing, and that's why we are actually helping the world make it through this. Saudi does not have the key place it used to have, and that is because of President Trump. And what are the Democrats doing? They are now trying to stop the pipelines in the Gulf of Mexico, the drilling in Alaska, and the continental shelf. That's their response to that. So I just wanted you to be real clear about why today we're not panicking like we might have been, you know, 3 or 4 years ago when those oil supplies were blown up in Saudi Arabia. Meanwhile, there's an election in Israel today, and so we'll stay tuned. I'll say more about that later. Carrie Severino, talking about Justice Kavanaugh, joins us next. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hi, I'm Jan Harper. If you're a pastor's wife, come be encouraged and renewed as we talk about the challenges and stresses unique to pastors and their wives.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat is coming October 8th through 10th to Linden Valley Conference Center in Linden, Tennessee. The retreat is 3 days and 2 nights of relaxation and building relationships. Our hosts will be Pastor Bert Harper, Director of Marriage, Family, and Pastoral Ministries, and co-host of Exploring the Word on AFR, and his wife, Jan. And our special speakers will be J.J. Jasper and Abraham Hamilton III. Lodging, meals, and materials are included in your registration. But hurry, space is limited. Register today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 300. That's 800-326-4543, extension 300. Or at repairingthefoundations.net.
The AFA Pastors and Wives Fishbowl Retreat. We'd love to see you there.
This is Pause to Pray, a chance each day to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today, we pray for Jonathan Plutzik, Chairman of the Board for the Federal National Mortgage Association, otherwise known as Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae works to create more mortgage opportunities in the United States. 2 Corinthians 9:6 reminds us of the importance of investing. Remember this: whoever sows sparingly will also reap sparingly, and whoever sows generously will also reap generously. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask for guidance for Jonathan Plutzik as he helps create investment opportunities in this country. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
When a public school bans Old Glory, that story next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
There is a controversy over the American flag at Lake Forest High School in Illinois. Parents reached out to me the other day regarding a recent memorial honoring the victims of the 9/11 terrorist attacks. The school's Young Americans for Freedom chapter had wanted to erect a flag display on campus to remember the dead. However, the school's leadership refused to let students plant American flags on campus. Instead, they had to post the flags on a nearby public parkway. One parent said he was told the display was too political. Another parent told me she was outraged by the school's decision, especially seeing how the school allowed students to engage in other politically motivated events, including a walkout in support of gun control. As I write in my new book, Culture Jihad, public schools are the engine driving the leftward cultural change in our nation. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I think it's a sad day in journalism. What we find is there's a continual assault on this administration.
What do you do now?
What do we do now is what I called for, which is for the House to begin an impeachment inquiry.
My concern here is that the process was a sham.
Called it a one-year anniversary reenactment. Senate Democrats reopening the sad and embarrassing chapter they wrote last September.
How can they do a thing like that and destroy somebody's life? I mean, they're destroying lives. And it's fake news. It's just fake news.
All right, Sandy Rios back with you. Yesterday we talked quite a bit about this, and it's time to talk about it again. And that is the unbelievable fresh attacks against Brett Kavanaugh. Not that there couldn't be something in his past, not any of the Supreme Court justices or any of us. Something should happen, could happen, that came out in the news, something we'd done in the past that was verified and maybe people needed to know. Like, say, I killed someone 5 years ago or something and you didn't know it. But no, nothing like that. The whole thing was started with a New York Times article. I think there were two on Sunday. And the bizarre thing is that they claim that there's another accuser, but the accuser, now that we know about it, doesn't really remember it and won't come forward. And the person that came forward is an attorney who is connected to the Clintons. So it just is another one of those very disturbing moments in our history that we're having to relive. It was a year ago when Brett Kavanaugh was disgracefully shredded in that appearance in the Senate Judiciary Committee. And someone who knows so much about this, Carrie Severino, who is the Judicial Crisis Network Chief Counsel and Policy Director. Carrie, of course, co-wrote a book with Molly Hemingway. They were with me not just a few months ago talking about this. The book is called Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, and the Future of the Supreme Court. And now, just to be clear, this article all came about because of a brand new book that's coming out called The Education of Brett Kavanaugh. Okay, so Carrie, welcome to the show. Now that I've given you a 10-minute introduction, thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks, Andy.
Hey, Carrie, did you know they were writing, these reporters from the New York Times are writing this other book?
Oh, yeah. We've known for a while they're writing it. There's some. There's a reporter from the Post writing a book as well. And we talked to people who they were reaching out to who said, gosh, I just don't trust people who have been involved effectively in the campaign against Kavanaugh this whole time to write a fair and even-handed book.
I'm just curious. You might not know this yet because the book, I don't think is it out yet? May not be out yet.
It comes out today. So today is the first day it's out available. Luckily, Molly and I were able to get an early copy of it. And really, that's the way that we were able to fact check their grossly incompetent article that doesn't include this really important information about the allegation. Imagine if we hadn't had that opportunity, we would all be laboring under the assumption that this was a real thing, not knowing that it doesn't even, the alleged victim herself doesn't even think an attack happened.
So, Carrie, I know you've talked about this countless times, I'm sure, since Sunday, but let's just break it down a little bit. The allegation is that it's not Debbie Ramirez, it's an unnamed person. Is that right? Or is this Debbie Ramirez? That's confusing to me.
No. Yeah, it's a different person. And in fact, while they include the name in their book, removing the name was, I guess, their excuse for not including it in the article. But of course, as you and I know, we're talking about, we can talk about it as just the woman, but it is not Debbie Ramirez. It's a different college friend.
Okay, who says she doesn't remember, right?
Right.
Okay, she doesn't remember.
She didn't speak to Kellyanne Pogrebin, but her friends say she's told them she doesn't remember. And they know this. They report that in their book.
All right. Yeah. So they actually admitted in their book that they just didn't. The two writers are saying that, they're hinting it's the editors of the New York Times article that left out that sort of information that really no one is firsthand account. No one, the victim herself says she doesn't remember it. How can this even be, Carrie? I mean, this is like for an attorney like you, for a common sense person like me, it's ridiculous. But for an attorney like you, it must have your head spinning.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know what the editorial normal times editorial practices are, but it's shocking to me that then important information would be excised from the article again when it could easily, they could have just changed her name to the woman, and that they wouldn't have even been aware of it because they obviously knew this was out there. And we've also found, and my co-author Molly Hemingway has tweeted about the fact that, yes, they blame the editors for this incident, but they also have given TV interviews and live interviews that mention, oh, yes, there's this other allegation, describe it, and do not include the crucial caveat that actually it's an allegation that is of the weakest possible form. The man who's alleged to have said that this incident happened, he didn't talk to them. They only have people who say, oh, yeah, this guy told me that this thing happened to this girl when they were all in college. I mean, it's gossip and hearsay. And it's even worse, it's gossip and hearsay, that the actual people who are supposed to be involved not only don't confirm, but say it didn't happen.
Well, and Max Dyer, we have to say, who is described in this New York Times article as a guy who runs a nonprofit, which is always like the pedigree for the left. That means he's some sort of angel of mercy. But we know that he was a member of Bill Clinton's defense team back during the Lewinsky investigation. He's not exactly an objective party. And so he comes forward. Oh, he says, here's the story that we're getting, Carrie, that he came forward to the senators, he came to the FBI, and they refused to investigate. And what do we know about that?
Well, apparently the Senator Coon turned the allegation over to the FBI. He is one of dozens of people from Yale who are outraged that the FBI doesn't just come at their beck and call and interview them. I think they're not understanding that this isn't you can't just order an FBI officer to come to your house. They have a, limited supply of our tax dollars funding them. They're not going to run down every story that has no basis to it. And just to remember, the actual details of the story aren't even that Kavanaugh himself did something, but that at a party his friends pushed him into a woman, or did, it put his genitalia around him. It's gross, but it's not even his actions that are implicated. So it's totally understandable to say, well, maybe they thought this is so far afield that this is not the central part of the FBI investigation. And again, when you have just him, who's a secondhand witness, talking about it, and the original person alleged to be involved isn't speaking herself, it's hard to imagine what value that would have even given the FBI.
Kara, you guys tracked this entire process. What recall for us the most outrageous claims made against Kavanaugh that didn't make the light of day? Do you remember? I remember one on a boat or something. It just got outrageous.
Yeah. No, the boat, the new Rhode Island rape boat. I mean, that one, the guy who submitted it admitted that he didn't actually have any reason to believe it was Kavanaugh, and it was referred to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation for lying to the Senate. There was another one where a woman wrote in saying that he had raped her when she was in high school. Turns out she was significantly older than him. No way it could have happened. And she also admitted, oh, I made that up. So they were just totally crazy things, not to mention some like Julie Swetnick's allegations that he was part of a serial gang rape effort in the suburbs of Maryland that just on their face should have been dismissed, but that got real play from Senate Democrats, from media attention. I mean, it's shocking the credulity of the people that were involved in this process. It's almost like no tool is unsuitable for attacking a judge, and that's the real concern here. This is, it's about the problems with the standards of these authors, but it's also, this is an attack on judicial independence. This is about people trying to intimidate the courts, I think, ultimately, with these continued attacks and smears without any foundation against a sitting Supreme Court justice. Because I really think this is about the left being worried that they're losing the ability to use the courts as a means to effect their radical policy goals. They rather have the courts do it when they can't accomplish it through Congress. And what we're seeing with these great judges that Trump is nominating and the progress being made on that front is they don't have that as an option, and they're lashing out.
Yeah, Kara, we've discussed this before. I don't think, personally, I don't think Brett Kavanaugh is the strongest. Look, he's strong in some ways, but I always worry about whether he's going to take a strong stand. And he has, I think, been disappointing in some decisions so far. Good in some, but not exactly like, a Scalia. Not exactly like that. And so you wonder, first of all, what effect this will have on him. And secondly, will there ever be a point where John Roberts stops catering to the New York Times and actually finds his own backbone? I'd be curious to know your thoughts about that.
Well, I'm optimistic that the overreach that we've seen recently on this front, I mean, this isn't the only example of attacks on judicial independence. It's also, there was an amicus brief led by Senator Whitehouse, filed by several Democratic senators in a recent gun case, a Second Amendment case, the Supreme Court's considering, and they, as much as, like a mafiosi kind of thing, where they said, well, basically, if you don't dismiss this case, we'll take up a bill that will maybe affect the court, and they're talking about packing the court, and they cite a lot of John Roberts' opinions back to him. It's clearly a message to Roberts. I think that was so unseemly and so crude that even the Chief Justice is going to be going, oh my gosh, I cannot be responding to this kind of bullying and intimidation tactic, because it looks very, very bad.
Well, and now that Kavanaugh has served on the court, and I don't know what their relationship was before, but there's a camaraderie on the court. You would think also that just the outrage at having a sitting justice so unfairly slandered in this way another time would be enough to set him off the edge. And what do you think Kavanaugh's, has he said anything at all? I haven't heard anything from him.
Right. Well, I mean, Supreme Court justices almost never do. And so that's the other reason it's actually very shameful, because it's someone who is not really, doesn't really have an ability to defend himself. It would be highly out of the ordinary for a Supreme Court justice to make any kind of public statement like that. So he's really just a sitting duck. And I think it has, as you point out, the other members of the court have seen this. We've even seen Justice Ginsburg recently come to his defense and say, you know, during and after the confirmation process, bemoaning what has become of our confirmation processes, talking about how when she was head of the ACLU women's division, she didn't get questioned and raked over the coals about her work, and yet people are being very hostile to Republican nominees for similar activism. It's not fair, and she has defended him as being smart and a very great member of the court. We talk about how basically every member of the court, after he came on, came to him privately and just said, you know, to welcome him, to say, to kind of commiserate about their own confirmation process. It is a collegial people. It might be one of the few places left in the country where people with different perspectives, different views, can get along and work together in a common cause. I think we should all take a page out of that book.
Well, that gives me, actually, that encourages me, Carrie, because we both know that Ruth Bader Ginsburg probably couldn't be further to the left on her position. So, and people, mm-hmm. she's so highly respected. Maybe on an outside chance, someone might listen to her. I'm curious, though. I think you would agree. The reason we're back here is because nothing was ever done to the liars mm-hmm. that tried to slander Judge Kavanaugh in that Senate hearing room. Nothing happened to them. What happened to that, Carrie? From your perspective as an attorney, do you think there were criminal things done by the people accusing that they could have been prosecuted for?
Well, I'll tell you, Chairman Grassley, chairman of the committee at the time, thought there were criminal things going on because his office referred several people for criminal investigation to the Department of Justice. Unfortunately, there is no evidence that anything has been done on those investigations yet. I bet there are more people. Chairman Graham could refer after the fact, because there was so much going on where people were just saying anything, and this is part of the problem. If you think there are no repercussions, if you think you can just say whatever you want to a government commission trying to dig into the truth on these things, that is going to just encourage people who have these bones to pick. We have enough trouble with people thinking they can say anything on social media and there's no repercussions, and kind of learning the hard way. Let's not encourage that in our government as well. It's a felony. It has 5 years prison sentence attached to it. There needs to be a real understanding that this has consequences, and I hope the Department of Justice does actually follow through on these criminal investigations. Let's not forget the senators also who were involved. I think there's a lot of cases where they violated Senate rules. I think they need to be held accountable as well, because they were involved in absolutely shameful handling of these allegations and the whole confirmation process.
Is there any evidence that any of the candidates or potential candidates on that list that the president famously has are being intimidated from actually, are they changing their mind, asking their names to be withdrawn because the climate is so horrible?
You know what? This is another worry. This is part of that same intimidation campaign, attacks on the judicial independence. It's attacks on people who might be considered. And we want our best men and women to be willing to step up. I know, I can't speak to any on the Supreme Court list, but I do know people who have said, you know what, I don't want to be considered for this appellate spot because it is so brutal. Because they're going, you know, I've got a family, or I have a job that I might have to go back to. I can't risk what they're going to try to do to me in the process. And that is sad, because these are our men and women who we want on our courts. We want these talented people to be serving our country. And I think that's part of the left's goal. They want to intimidate people from being able to serve in that way when they're such principled conservatives.
No, it's becoming open thuggery. There's just no question about it. It's threats. And under any other circumstance, I think it would be RICO violations, threatening, all kinds of things that they're doing. And we're just overwhelmed with it. And I don't think there are enough of us in power to respond the way we should, to sort of tap it down and put them back in their place and bring them back into a honoring law and order. Carrie Severino, Judicial Crisis Network, and her book, Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court. Can't say enough about that book. Carrie, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for joining me.
Great, thanks.
We'll talk to you soon. Sandy Rios in the morning, AFR Talk.
God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them male and female. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Hasbro has created a new version of their long popular board game, Monopoly. The new version, called Miss Monopoly, was designed, according to Hasbro, as the first where women make more money than men. To accomplish this feat, the game is played by giving female players more money at the start of the game. Great job, Hasbro. You are empowering women and girls by telling them the only way for them to succeed is by giving them a head start. I will not give my daughters that message.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner, or visit the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Who will be in heaven? Will we know one another? And do people in heaven know what's happening here on earth? This week on Pathway to Victory, Dr. Robert Jeffress addresses these important questions about our eternal home. Join us as we continue the series, A Place Called Heaven, this week on Pathway to Victory with Dr. Robert Jeffress.
Weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Bible says a good name is to be chosen rather than great riches. A man's reputation is the most valuable thing he possesses, which is why it is a horrendous thing to maliciously damage a good man's name. Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh is living through the nightmare of a second all-out assault on his character. The talking snake media is circulating the accusation that he committed an act of sexual assault while in college, but there is no evidence for it. And the New York Times finally admitted that the alleged victim doesn't remember anything like that happening to her at all. What's being done to Justice Kavanaugh is evil, wicked, and demonic. Father, we claim your promise that there is no weapon that has been formed against him that will succeed, and that he will refute every tongue that accuses him. May this be his vindication from you as the servant of the Lord.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with a Secure Freedom Minute. In the blink of an eye, Saudi Arabia lost half of its oil processing capacity to an attack by Iran. The devastation thus caused and its repercussions for that nation and world energy markets should put to rest once and for all illusions that something comparable or far worse can't happen here. That possibility prompted President Trump last March to issue an executive order requiring federal agencies to assess and fix the vulnerabilities of our electric grid to catastrophic takedown by foreign adversaries like Iran or naturally occurring phenomena. Unfortunately, deep state bureaucrats are impeding implementation of the president's order, thus perpetuating our immense peril. One such bureaucrat is the Homeland Security Department's Scott Backhouse, who justifies slow-rolling the president by suggesting that the risk of electromagnetic pulses taking down the electric grid are, quote, overestimated, unquote. Want to bet? Think Saudi Arabia. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Just something. Carrie Severino will be at the Eagle Forum event in, it's at Crystal City, actually. It's just south of the Pentagon this weekend. And I'm going to be there, too. I've mentioned this to you before. And if you're in the Virginia area, it would be great to see you. You can go to eagleforum.org, eagleforum.org, and you can find out about, it's called Eagle Council. It'll be there highlighted somewhere, and just click on it, and it will tell you how you can come join us, because there's going to be some great speakers, including Carrie. So I just wanted to mention that to you. There was a lot of news today that I want to get into. First of all, I talked to you quite a bit about the bombing in Saudi Arabia and the oil. Of course, the Middle East seems always to be in turmoil. When is it ever at peace? I can't think of a time in my lifetime when there's been much peace in the Middle East. But today in Israel, it's a special kind of time. They have a big election today. Bibi Netanyahu is being challenged by Benny Gantz, who has formed what's called the Blue and White Party. And it's my understanding that Netanyahu is actually in some trouble here. The race is very close. He needs 61 votes, I guess, in the Knesset to prevail, and he does not have it yet, according to people that are telling me what's going on here. So because we're looking at this from afar, I don't claim to be an expert. I'll just tell you what my expert friends are telling me, is that Benny Gantz has hired Joel Benenson to be his campaign advisor. And Joel Benenson is a former Obama advisor. He was like the, well, I'll give you his exact title. He was the person, here we are. He's the CEO and founder of Benenson Strategy Group. He led the research and polling programs for President Barack Obama's 2008 and 2012 campaigns. And he served as a senior strategist for Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential bid. That should tell you something about Benny Gantz and the Blue and White Party. And so Netanyahu's in trouble. Insider friends are telling me part of it is just fatigue, because Netanyahu has been in office so long and people are just kind of weary of his personality. I mean, nothing, it's easy for us to say in the grand scheme of things, but, you know, do you really want someone who's connected to President Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton? You have to understand that the Israelis, when President Obama first ran for office, I was there actually during that time, they loved him. Israelis were enamored of Barack Obama because, by and large, the Jews in Israel they're on the left. They're not conservative. Now, the Orthodox tend to be conservative, and there are some, and I think things are changing a little bit. They changed a lot after they realized that when Barack Obama got in office that he was no friend to them. It was all a sham. He did everything he could to hurt Israel. Remember how he insulted Bibi Netanyahu? And so gradually Israelis began to get that, and Barack Obama's favorable ratings went way down. But how quickly we forget. They're tired of Bibi Netanyahu, and they want something new, and Benny Gantz is that something new. I'm sure he is very convincing, because we know how that works politically. But we know who's behind him, and now that's tremendous concern. So that's happening even as we speak in Israel. Just some news on this report. We told you that Inspector General's report is coming out very soon. That Michael Horowitz has turned over copies of his report to both the Justice and the FBI departments, and they are reviewing it. Then they'll send it back to the Inspector General with the redacted versions, and that's the way it goes. Then Michael Horowitz will release it. But Myron York has a very interesting piece this morning or yesterday in the Washington Examiner, and he basically recounts that on May 23rd of this year, President Trump gave Attorney General William Barr full and complete authority to declassify information relating to the actions of the FBI and intelligence community in investigating the 2016 Trump campaign. And we thought it was going to happen quickly, but we waited and we waited. We waited a week, then 2 weeks, and then a month, and more passed with no declassifications. It still hasn't happened, at least that the public knows. But Byron says the anticipation is now building again. So many people think that this whole reveal is going to take place through the Horowitz report and also through the report of the other attorney that John Durham, that Attorney General Barr has appointed. We have reason to believe that this other attorney general who's working allegedly on the FISA part of this is working with a grand jury. So we think that there may be criminal charges, but we don't know. Nobody really knows. This is all speculation. But Byron is talking about how inside sources in D.C. are expecting that maybe as much as 30% of this report will be redacted. But the Attorney General Barr has the right and the freedom to make it all public. And Byron, of course, is weighing in on that, saying they absolutely should. We have been The FBI and the Justice Department and others have protected themselves long enough. Let's see it. What happened? What did they do? What is the truth here? And from another source, another kind of look at things, Josh Campbell was a former FBI assistant to James Comey. He was actually in the car with Comey, traveling with him when he went to see President Trump in that fateful meeting where he said he was going to brief President-elect Trump at the time on the Russian dossier. And that was his purported reason. But Josh Campbell, in a book that he's just written, he said that it wasn't, this is what was actually happening, that Comey took the unusual step of requesting a top-secret laptop be handy to write notes following the Trump meeting. And he basically says that FBI officials and Comey were strategizing to use this meeting with President-elect Trump as they were investigating him. And they were setting him up. Comey was supposed to be briefing the president. That was the guise of it all. But really, he was taking notes and trying to find fault. He was trying to find a crime. And remember, he told the president, what, three different times he was not under investigation? So President, former Director Comey has told us many times, oh, he just went to brief the president, but he didn't. He got back in the car. He got on that secure laptop. He typed up all his meticulous notes, and then he got on a conference call and shared with a lot of the members, leaders of the FBI, what happened in great detail, and they were all strategizing together. And, you know, that's just completely unseemly, I have to say. You know, there was no reason to think that President Trump was some kind of a Russian spy. And they knew that the dossier, they already knew that it was silly, flimsy nonsense. And as I've said, I don't know, maybe 20 times at this microphone, I knew it was silly, flimsy nonsense. I told you at this microphone, the day after it came out, I told you I read it, and not the whole thing, I just read portions of it, and it was ridiculous. No one would believe that. You don't think these guys at the FBI, these seasoned intelligence, bright guys trained in the art of fettering out what's true and what isn't, wouldn't know that? So it's a mess, and that book will be coming out. Josh Campbell is a CNN analyst, so that's his little bit. I'm sure he has more to say, but that's what's highlighted this morning in the Daily Caller. Along with that, speaking of the president, let me just continue that theme for a second. The New York City prosecutors have subpoenaed President Trump's tax returns. It's the office of Manhattan District Attorney Cyrus Vance Jr. He sent a subpoena to the accounting firm Mazars USA seeking 8 years of Trump's personal and business returns. And now Vance is a Democrat. He previously subpoenaed the Trump Organization for records related to hush money paid to porn actress Stormy Daniels. Mazars USA is saying in a statement that it will fully comply with its legal obligations. Of course, that could mean a lot of things. They may think that it's not legal to be asked for that, but it just never ends. It reminds me of Les Miserables and Inspector Javert, you know, going after Jean Valjean and just never letting go. It's really what it does remind me of. That's the latest on that. I want to change the subject because actually there is some good news and I want to bring it to you. I know I so seldom give you good news, but the Arizona Supreme Court has just made a good decision. In fact, David French writes in National Review, the Arizona Supreme Court strikes a powerful blow for free speech and religious freedom. And this is it's Christian calligraphers and painters Joanna Duca and Brianna Koski. They own a company, Brush and Nib Studios, and they serve all kinds of clients, gay and straight, but they were asked to do wedding calligraphy for a gay wedding, and they refused. And, of course, the same thing happened to them. It's happening to Christian conservative business people around the country. So the court just held for them, as a matter of fact. There's more to that, and I thought, there was more to that. Maybe it's in this article. Baronel Stutzman, who is the florist from Washington State. Baronel is actually someone that I've had the privilege of getting to know. She's just absolutely incredible person. I just love her. She's a great grandmother. She's very kind. She looks kind and she acts kind, and she's just filled with God's grace and mercy. And, of course, two of her clients who'd worked with her for years, done business with her for years, set her up and came to her knowing that she would have a conscience, a Christian conscience, about doing flowers at their gay wedding. And she said kindly that she couldn't do it. She gave them suggestions of other florists, and they went after her with a vengeance. That happened in 2013, and it's been happening ever since. She's had to defend herself in court. She's been fined mercilessly by Washington State. Excuse me, it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court, in a usual John Roberts fashion, didn't make a decision. They sent it back to Washington State, and they said, in light of last year's masterpiece cake shock decision, and that was up in Colorado, that was Jack Phillips. remember, he, I would take me too much time to explain, but he was the cake baker who had the same situation, same but different. Another winsome guy, just who, winsome meaning his character and affect, exemplary, who had something happen to him too the same way, and went all the way to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court gave him a piecemeal victory. And now they're after Jack again in Colorado because John Roberts' court did not make a final decision. But on the part where they said that Colorado had an animus towards Jack Phillips and his company because of his Christian faith, they've asked Baronel now to go back before the Supreme Court in Washington and for the Washington State Supreme Court to rule, maybe consider this new decision and review this again. Well, guess what they did? Why, they came down with the exact same decision. They didn't change their mind at all. So now people are filing on behalf of Baronel to get this heard one more time at the Supreme Court. And God willing, she will get a hearing. I know that she and her husband, she has, you know, she's not been able to do business. They are in danger of losing their home. They may have already lost it, for all I know. I've not spoken to her personally in a long time. And so, but the Arizona decision is a good bellwether. So if one Supreme Court, one state, has given the right for these calligraphers and artists to express their personal faith by refusing to do things that are against their personal convictions, and they've been, and it's been held up, then that portends really well for other cases around the country and for a good hearing at the Supreme Court. So we will just hope and pray that the Supreme Court will hear Baronel's case and give her some justice. You know, and that all comes back to what we've talked about with Brett Kavanaugh and with this attack by the left against the court. It doesn't really matter, you know, if Brett Kavanaugh is really guilty. It doesn't matter how much nonsense. What it does is it smears him. It people will always remember, yeah, I heard something. 10, 15 years from now, kids growing up, yeah, I heard something about him. Always a taint, always. And that's what they love to do. And it reminds me of a story that I was reminded of yesterday that, remember when Mitt Romney was running for president and from Utah, the leader of the Senate, came out and said that Mitt Romney had not paid his taxes in 10 years. Do you remember that? But it wasn't true. Wasn't true, and it never was corrected until after the election. And after the election was held, then the leader of the Senate, whose name, why is it escaping me? He was like the object of our wrath for a very long time. He came out and Harry Reid. Yes, so Harry said, when he was asked about this, don't you feel bad? That wasn't true. How could you come out and make that accusation? And his response was, well, we won, didn't we? And so that's what this is about. It really doesn't matter if it sticks. It's about destroying character and destroying our confidence. So, man, have we ever got to be diligent and be careful about what we listen to and what we believe and what we don't believe. It's getting harder to discern the truth. And yet that's where God comes in, because he gives us the spirit that can do that. So, all right. Well, listen, thanks for joining me this morning. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.